Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Paul Reid, Chief Executive of the HSE. Good morning to you. Thank you for coming in this morning. You might have heard Professor Corina Butler on just before you joined us here. She was telling us about using the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine for the over 70s. How much would that relieve the pressure on the rollout?
Good morning, Claire. Yeah, well, look, based on the advice from NIAC, I think first thing has to go, that goes to the CMO, obviously onto the minister and adopted by government. So we wait the final letter of clarification on it. But ultimately, what it does give us more flexibility in our distribution, more flexibility as we walk through the various groupings of population. Now, obviously, right now, one of the prioritised groups we're working at is that group four, which is medically vulnerable. And we have been using, plan to use AstraZeneca with that. So it does give us a level of flexibility. We have been using the mRNA vaccines for the over 70s. We'll continue to do so. But
I just wonder, would it slow down the rollout for group four for the medically vulnerable if you start using it on the over 70s? Will it have an impact?
No, I don't expect so. I think, look, the reality of, and Corina said it ourselves, the priority always has to be by age. So we're continuing with the over 70s as a key priority. But in parallel, we have commenced the programme to address those medically vulnerable, and probably in advance of when we might have started the programme, because technically it's after the over 70s, but we're starting that, have started it this week, and we'll continue to progress that over the next few weeks as well.
We'll talk about supply in a moment, but what you can control is distribution, and we've had several GPs on this programme. I know you're aware of their concerns about getting the vaccine, not being told how much they're getting. Sometimes the orders are cancelled. Sometimes they're not getting the hardware with it. They're not getting the syringes and the needles. Are those problems sorted out now?
Yeah, I know you say we can't control supply. And I would just like to take a brief step back, particularly related to the GP programme at the minute. I mean, the way we're approaching this is to address those most vulnerable first. And if you just stand back and look at the benefits over the last few weeks, in particular as we're addressing the older groups over 70 and over 85s through the GPs, the benefits we're seeing are absolutely phenomenal. So if you take it that 43% of the mortality rates since we've had COVID have been through the 85 years and over population. We've all of those completed, practically completed by the end of this week. There are some minor GP practices to be addressed. And we're seeing huge benefits already from that age group.
Yeah, I think people accept that it works. Mm. They just want to get it.
Yeah, and I just want to give that assurance to your listeners, because we have vaccinated by the end of this weekend over 600,000. So if you take that age population, similarly for the over 70s, you know, we've almost over 100,000 of the over 70s, you know, not just the 85s done as well. So that's really very positive. But also, if I can just briefly reference, the benefits we're also seeing across other, not just people we've vaccinated. So, for example, healthcare workers who are highly vulnerable. The benefits we've already seen quite there are phenomenal. So just 8 weeks ago, we had 16% of the cases.
And I think people know about the efficacy. They know that it works. They know the benefits are there. That's why the pressure is on for people to get the jab into their arm. So on the distribution side, have all of those issues been sorted out? You know, getting a box of vaccines, one thing, not getting the needles and the syringes. One doctor telling us he was driving around on a Saturday night getting them from a podiatrist at 9:30.
Okay, and just specifically to your question, yes, we've worked through. It was a 3-week campaign overall to address the 85s with the GPs in the first instance. First 2 weeks went very well. At the end of last week, we had the vast majority of the 72,500 people in that age group complete their vaccinations. All through about 1,400 GP practices all across the country, that has worked reasonably well. With a smaller number, we fully acknowledge, we said this last week, there were issues in terms of distribution, some GPs not getting the allocation that they expected, and in some cases, some GPs not getting the consumables, the syringes in time for their vaccinations. We put in place a whole range of new supports in conjunction with GPs and an agreement with the representative body, the IMO. That involves a call centre established now where they have a direct contact line, a number of relationship managers directly working with a range of GPs. And finally, the solution around a number of GPs who weren't in a position to buddy up. There were about 30 GP practices across of the 1,400 practices. So we put in place arrangements for them this week for the distribution of their vaccines and for that those practices to be completed this week.
I suppose the concerns are that when the supply does ramp up, we need to know that the HSE can do it.
Yeah, and I think what we have demonstrated, Claire, is that we are doing it, we can do it. If you look at any supply we get on any given week, and even the numbers for this week, we're administering the vaccines. 95% of anything we get in any given week is administered within that week.
Yeah, I suppose it's easy to say that if the supply is really low.
No.
When it ramps up, will you be able to cope with it?
No,
that's what people want to know when they hear those stories that I just outlined.
Absolutely. And the stories that you've outlined are difficult for GP practices. They've been difficult for the people who have been vaccinated. But we have addressed them. And they were a relatively minor number of the total 1,400 GP practices that went really well.
Okay. Yeah. AstraZeneca. You spoke about your frustration with AstraZeneca, and you know, I was reading this morning, you were expecting 52,000, you were promised 26, and then when it arrived it was 10,000?
Well, I was just making an example, particularly over the last 3 to 4 weeks, it's where we've seen particular issues in terms of the supply issues from AstraZeneca. So they are a major part of our supply of the 1.1 billion that we're expecting by the end of March. About 370,000 of that comes from AstraZeneca. Particularly over the last 3 to 4 weeks, yes, the reliability of supply. The problem for ourselves and the HSE is that we are operating at a very high efficiency level. So when they come in, as I mentioned. So, for example, if we get a short or late notice of a distribution to us, for example, last Friday fortnight, we got late notice of a distribution of about 64,000 that wouldn't be arriving to the level we expected. That impacted us on that weekend for the Saturday and Sunday. So not many administrations across Europe are administering in that efficient level. So it does impact us. Mm-hmm. So specifically related to AstraZeneca, yes, there's been issues over the past 3 to 4 weeks. Generally, our supply levels from Pfizer has been quite good. And similarly from
So they're Moderna. Delivering what they promise.
Yeah, there was one minor blip at the very start, in fairness to Pfizer-BioNTech. They addressed it and they have committed, so and their supplies are generally consistent and good.
What do you think is going on with AstraZeneca? Because I was reading about the supplies that they're giving to other countries, and we look north of the border where they've had excessive doses and they're wondering how to administer them right this week. What's their problem with Ireland?
I don't think it's Ireland, actually. I think it's Europe. What we are experiencing is similar problems all across Europe. That's the facts of what's happening. I know there's general frustration from our own government, and I know it's general frustration at a European level with it about what was committed in the advance purchase agreement, how we built our plans based on reliability of those supplies. The issue really is at a European level and commitment to what was procured. And in many cases, as you've heard reported, what was paid up front to support the, you know, reliability of supply. So it's not just Ireland. I think it's a European level and it's particular frustration, of course. Now, having said all of that, we have had supplies from AstraZeneca. We have difficulties in the last 3 to 4 weeks. There are discussions going on with them literally as we speak. And the minister was talking to them last night.
Yeah.
And that is with the intention of getting confirmation.
Didn't seem to get much out of them from what I heard this morning. I mean, you know, we're sorry that we can't do any better.
Yeah, and the reality for us is we need to get a stronger level of predictability, particularly in the next few weeks to the end of March. But what's more important for us is as we head into quarter two, and we know we're reaching out to the next levels of the population, that we do get that reliability and supply. We're building our plans on vaccination centres, on trained vaccinators all the country. We're building on very strong supply lines. Now, thankfully and very positively, you've confirmed this morning in your own reporting, the Johnson & Johnson one is a really positive news for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we're committed to 2.2 million of that vaccine for next year. We've had communications from them last night. They're going to talk with us again shortly to work through the distribution schedule that we can expect. And as you know, positive.
What do you reckon, end of April, May, that we start vaccinating with that?
Yeah, well, what they have committed to us at the early stages, and again, we have to work this through with them, is probably a total of about 600,000 in the second quarter, which will be April, May and June. The supply in terms of what might come in April, May and June, we still have to work through with them. But I would expect, you know, a start of a supply in April, a stronger supply in May and June. But again, we're going to see.
The Daily Mail is reporting this morning the end of April is when we'll see the first Johnson & Johnson doses. Do you think that's about right?
Well, literally last night, we've had communications from them to sit down and they want to work through commitments in terms of reliability and the schedule. So we really want to do that. And anything else I would say would be speculation right now. But ultimately, we do know the delivery in April would be less down to May and June. But that's something we're going to work through.
I heard Rachel English this morning when she was talking to the minister AstraZeneca have 30 million doses sitting in warehouses in the United States. And AstraZeneca has asked, can we send those over to Europe? They can't use them in America at the moment because they haven't approved them. And the Biden administration has said, no, you can't have them. Now, that sounds to me like an issue where we could apply a bit of political pressure to the friendly to the Irish president.
Well, look, ultimately,
it's very frustrating, isn't it, to think that they're all sitting there and they can't use them.
Well, look, ultimately, I do know there's very significant engagement, very significant pressure at a political level. In fairness to the minister and Taoiseach, they intervened at various stages with supply levels and we got stability at some stage with Pfizer, at some stage with Moderna. And I know that's where that engagement will continue. It's it is at a political level where the engagement will happen, is happening. And as you know, the minister has, the Taoiseach has now committed to seek a meeting with the CEO of AstraZeneca, and we would welcome that as well.
Will you be at that meeting?
I don't expect so. I mean, look, the reality...
You're in charge of the rollout, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. The reality of how we have organised the arrangements in terms of the whole programme is the at a ministerial level, and indeed at a departmental level is where the engagement and government officials engage on the supply issues. And from HSE perspective, we mobilise to deliver whatever is committed. But look, if needed, I will be there.
A lot of people are getting in touch with us this morning. They're really concerned about AstraZeneca because of the reports of clots and the suspension of its use in some of European countries. I know I spoke to Karina Butler about this, but the messages keep coming to us this morning and people are concerned also because we have changed our position now on the older cohort when it comes to AstraZeneca. Do you understand those fears? How will they be addressed?
Yeah, I understand your fears. And I think as Karina covered it quite well this morning.
Yeah, she spoke to us about the efficacy and we accept all of that. But it seems to be a very genuine fear amongst people. And they're telling us, I'm not taking it. I want the other ones.
Yeah, no, but I think, I mean, we always have to take our advice and guidance from the medical agencies. And I know the EMA met yesterday and they issued a statement yesterday evening and our own HPRA would be engaged in that. And they basically, you know, have indicated there's no immediate indications that there's any difference between experience of clots in the general population versus with this vaccine. We've had, you know, as Karina covered this morning, a very small, minor number, but doesn't indicate anything outside a normal population expectation. So, you know, it was reassuring, to be frank, the EMA announcement yesterday evening when that emerged.
I don't know if you had time to watch Primetime last night.
And, I did, indeed.
The public health doctors, your own staff. One was on the verge of tears talking about how they have no support. They don't have the resources to deal with this pandemic. That was clear, using pen and paper and an obsolete, it sounded like, IT system. Have we let them down? Has the HSE let them down?
I'd just like to address the coverage, the overall programme last night, and three issues. First of all, before I address three, I want to acknowledge, as I did yesterday, the phenomenal work our public health teams have done. You know, we talk a lot about our frontline workers. These guys have done a Trojan work for us throughout the year, and I thank them for it. Three perspectives just in last night's programme. First of all, the issue around pay and the pay issue around consultant status, etc., that is in an industrial relations process. That's where that should be, should where it stay, and the IMO and government officials are engaged on that. Secondly, just in relation to some of the systems or processes that our public health teams work with, we have a committed resourcing plan to strengthen our public health teams, has been working through since October. So the resourcing, we have about 1,000 applications. We've interviewed about 500 people. We've offered jobs to 240 people and about 110 people will be starting over the next few weeks. So we knew it does need to be resourced up. We are resourcing it up. Secondly, specifically in relation to a system that they use, which is a disease registration system, it's called CIDR, which is an older system. It is a legacy system and it has to be changed. It has been upgraded to support them in terms of stability. The third piece, which I just want to say, which didn't come through in the programme, is in terms of public health and our tracking and tracing process, there is another aspect to this, which is our contact tracing and contact management process, which supports the public health teams. That didn't exist a year ago. We now have 900 people on contact tracing. We now have 750 people swabbing. All of that data and all of that information, which is supported by a state-of-the-art system, it's a Microsoft Dynamics system, all of that data and system is available to help the public health teams. So I acknowledge they have been working with a legacy system, but it is equally important to acknowledge that we've also invested in a very significant contact tracing support system to help.
I mean, just I felt very moved watching that last night and seeing, I don't think people would stand there and say, I'm doing this on my day off because I don't want to take away from the hours that I work. I'm getting upset on national television because I feel I need to ask for help here. I don't think I could watch that and feel like what I saw wasn't genuine.
Oh, and I
do you accept that?
I'm certainly not saying anything different than that. Yeah. What I am saying is just want to reflect the supports that we acknowledge have to be put in place throughout. And look, the public health teams have been to the fore with us. We've had many of the public health doctors at our press briefings every week, giving information, done some Trojan work with schools and getting schools back.
I think maybe what you're getting at there was what Dr. Emer Shelley said afterwards in the interview in the studio. Many public health doctors wish to speak publicly to the media about the challenges they're facing, but they're not allowed to.
No, I completely reject it. We have regular discussions. There's a whole line structure in terms of engagement with public health doctors. It's reports into a chief clinical officer. We've a lead on terms of public health, national director on public health, and that's a normal engagement. And we have had, and I have met public health teams. Mm-hmm. We've had public health doctors at our press briefings on a regular occasion. They have briefed regularly about, particularly very strong engagement with the public, about giving specific incidents of how transmission impacts. You know.
So they're not stopped from speaking to the media and speaking publicly?
I think what you've probably seen over the last few weeks and months is regular engagement.
Why would they say that then? Why would she say that?
I'm not sure. But what I can say is, and I think many media programmes have had many of our public health doctors on quite regularly, indeed talking about some of the challenges that they face, but also talking about the key role that they play, mm-hmm. which I fully respect.
Will the two public health doctors who appeared in that programme, will they be in trouble for doing it?
Not at all. Not at all. Sure. I mean, people are expressing their views, they're expressing their frustrations. I want to create a culture of openness and transparency in the HSE. That's what we were doing. It's a key issue for our board. We want to listen to people's concerns. I want to acknowledge the concerns. I've been very public acknowledging the challenges there are public health teams. We've made proposals to government and secured with government support an extra €12 million investment in public health for next year. We want to build a pandemic workforce for the future. And they're actually key issues for ourselves.
There was a very large funeral in the town where you live yesterday. 300 people in Carrick and Shannon, members of the travelling community, we understand. What did you make of that?
Well, I think just funerals in general, first of all, to say it's a very difficult time for people grieving, for all families who are grieving at funeral times. And, you know, everybody acknowledges it's not easy. But ultimately, you know, what really kind of hurts people is when they see the sacrifices that everybody's made in terms of public health measures, and then they see various experiences, whether it's funerals or other incidents, where it just rocks people for the sacrifices they've made. So specifically in relation to that one, I mean, funerals in general are a risk factor, and that's why the public health restrictions, which are very difficult for people, have been put in place. We know, and we experienced throughout this year, very high transmission levels of virus at funerals, mm-hmm. all across the country in many communities. So, you know, we've worked well with
events after funerals, really, isn't that where they were seen?
It can be. It can be at wakes. It can be at events prior to funeral, events after the funeral. High transmission levels, high impact in communities, and over a sustainable period of time, we can track it. You know.
Okay, Paul Reid, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, Claire.
Take a break.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.